Hello, it's Bree Bagwell with your Only Vans Breecap, and today my friend Josh Kretschmer joins me on the podcast where I immediately dive into the one show out of over 1,000 that I've done that I had to cut short, embarrassingly, due to an uncontrollable tickle cough. Because that's what you should tell a writer for the Rolling Stone, right, Bree? Go me. Just kidding, I can tell Josh anything because he writes about all of my friends and knows us all as real people who aren't polished and shiny, but he likes us anyway. He's written 4 books surrounding our scene, including Red Dirt, Motel Cowboy Show, Red Dirt Unplugged, Hey, I'm in that one, and Never Say Never, about Cross Canadian Ragweed. They're available now at backloungepublishing.com and Amazon. I'm so glad he talks about being on the road with Wyatt Flores, who has taken the scene by storm, and I learned so much in this podcast, and you will too. Thank you, Josh, for coming straight from the airport and recording with us in Nashville, Tennessee, in the beautiful Martin Guitar Showroom. Enjoy. Hey, y'all, this is Bree Bagwell with Only Vans. And did you know this is going to be my 13th or 14th year at Music Fest in Steamboat, Colorado? I can't believe it. So this is Music Fest's 40th year being a festival. That is so incredible. It's one of the best music festivals there is. There's over 50 bands. So what are you waiting for? Go to themusicfest.com. Get on that wait list. It sells out every single year almost immediately. So you don't want to miss out. You don't want to be the only person that's not experiencing the coolest music festival there is. When you book your trip to Music Fest at Steamboat, you get 6 nights of mountainside lodging, 4 days lift passes, and 1 night lift pass. And don't forget that your Music Fest exclusive live music marathon pass is included with over 200 hours of live music and more. Go to themusicfest.com and tell them Bree Bagwell sent you. The Music Fest at Steamboat, down home, up high. Come get roll with us.
You know what I do whenever I miss the old Bree Bagwell? I get my phone out and I look at it and I find the first album and I press play on it.
Like, thank
it's,
you.
It's very easy thank to you. Do. It's very easy to connect.
Thank you.
I mean,
and Sony owns those masters, so I won't get any of that money, but I appreciate it.
Right. I'm doing this for me, not for you.
Yeah. Right. Hey, hey, everybody, this is Bree Bagwell, and this is my podcast, Only Vans, where I talk to my friends in my van. We did 12 states in 22 days, 20 shows, and it was the last one.
So, Wayne, that's like that like bar 114. It's like downtown, this little square.
Well, they probably hate me. The owner was really nice. But I tried, but I just like couldn't sing. And then I just panicked and ran. But I did 30 minutes. I was only opening for 45 minutes.
Okay.
It wasn't like I didn't do it. But for me, I was like mortified.
Yeah. And when it's over, you're not going to the Martin Guitar Museum.
Yeah. Like, well, I didn't go because I wasn't feeling right. And it's because I wasn't feeling right because... it was all new allergies up there.
Oh, yeah, that happened, yeah.
So, because it was crazy. We were out for so long. And then as soon as we got to Maryland and we were in all these trees, I just started feeling off. And anyway, sorry, Wayne, Pennsylvania, which is so sad. I want to go, if I was super rich, I would just go do a free show for them. I might still do that someday.
Maybe you'll be super rich one day.
Well, I'm working on it.
That's right.
Wait, you know what? I'm actually making really good money right now, but I'm spending it all.
Oh, I can relate to that.
Money comes in, money goes out.
That's what's preventing me from being super rich as well.
Yeah, we're gonna get there. I mean, I think we're in a room. Actually, this is partly why I don't have as much money as I should, is because of Martin guitars. I have a fleet of Martins.
Lovely.
Yeah, so thank you to Martin Guitar for letting us record in your room today. Where do you even live, really, though? Because I don't know this about you, because I've seen you in 5 different states.
Yeah.
I don't know where you live.
Okay, so I live on the Upper East Side, Manhattan. So 88th and 1st.
Cool.
Right between the East River and Central Park, about halfway.
Okay.
So if you walk right down my street, about 10 minutes, you get to the Met and the Guggenheim. And if you go the other way, you get to the East River Ferry.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And Gracie Mansion, where the mayor lives.
Lovely. But cool. I never see you there. I see you in Tulsa. I see you in
Tulsa,
Florida.
Yeah.
I see you in Texas. I don't think I've ever seen you in New York.
That is correct.
So we should change that.
It's because, like, It wasn't until I got to the New York Times that I had, they were the first people to give me the time and freedom to write about music, and also like enough money that I could do it and not go broke.
How do you even get to that point in your career where you're like, the New York Times? Like, that's so wild to even say.
You spend your entire life bouncing from dead end, not dead end. You spend your entire career running from job to job so you don't get laid off, and then you make it to the Times, and all of a sudden you're just there.
Oh my gosh.
That's great.
Yeah, it's kind of just like music where you're like, rush, and yes. go, and then all of a sudden you're like, I'm on the Opry stage or something.
How the hell did I get here?
Yeah, well, I'm very proud of everything that you've done, because I think that, you know, people are really paying attention more now than ever to what's happening in our genre. And I think it's a combination of, obviously, like the music and the people writing great songs and putting out authentic music, but the people like you that are actually shining like giant media light on our genre. It's really, I think that, you know, aggregation of that has seemed to be, do you feel like that? Like people are really like more than ever.
Yeah, I feel like we're in the middle of this, like through the looking glass moment, or through this sort of Rubicon we're crossing, where, you know, our genre is now known worldwide. And I don't know how much my actual, like the actual act of writing a story about one of these artists helps, but what I think it does is I think it like lends this like aura of credibility to the blow up.
Totally.
In other words, like, as I'm not causing it, but I'm sort of like stamping that it's real.
Right, solidifying it. I agree. And sometimes we are also focused on what's next, and we're all in the trenches as far as like touring constantly. So for someone like me to have a chapter in a book or whatever, it's so validating, and it just kind of gives us that little push to keep going, because what we do is so unlike what other people do, because we are on tour all the time year round.
And I feel like my like standard answer to the why is just, now that people beyond the I-35 corridor like this music, I feel like I'm out there telling people where the music they like has come from. And that's why like it was very important to include you in Red Dirt Unplugged, because if you don't tie all of that together, then you miss a part of the origin story. And you also miss out on like lots of good music if you don't know where this artist was influenced by, or who played in this band with this artist. If you don't realize all that, then you're not getting the complete picture. And so of course, since nobody else is really doing it, I can pretty much at liberty to paint whatever pictures I want in those books, but that's not the one I want to paint. Is I want you to know all these other artists that are tied to the ones that you like. It's important.
Right. Or even, I mean, I love Motel Cowboy Show. I was reading that again on the way to Brown Brothers. I love knowing kind of the history of that geographical area, because I'm obviously more familiar with the Texas, like Gary P. Nunn, versus like the Idaho scene.
One of the things that first of all, learning about that is my favorite thing about writing the books. Learning about all these different little threads in Idaho that ultimately led to Reckless Kelly headlining the Ryman. So, learning about all that is just fascinating to me, but I also think it's like a microcosm of what I'm actually working toward, which is, when I'm finished writing books, I want to have accidentally told the story of Texas music.
Oh my gosh.
If I just wrote a Texas music book, it'd be so boring. It'd be like 50 chapters, and there'd be a volume for, you know, Austin, and a volume for Fort Worth, and a volume for Lubbock. But if you can go all around the country, even all around the world, and explore these genres, and they're always being filtered through this prism of Texas, then it's a lot more fun that way. And then at the end of it, though, every single question you have about Texas can also be answered here. And so that's why I'm like waiting. The very last, if you ever see me put out a book that is just somehow, some way called Texas Music, know that it's going to be my last one, because I will feel like I have set up all the other little pockets and genres and scenes and threaded them back to Texas. And now it's time to tie them all together. So until I get to that point, I'm just going to keep bouncing around the country and always making sure to return to my own home in the world of Red Dirt, because that's also fun to write about. But my big desire with all this is that by the time I'm finished, I hope I've helped people not just understand all these other scenes around the world, but how they're all tied back to Austin and the Hill Country and everything that we consider Texas music, because it's such a complicated, it's such a complex genre.
It really is. And people try to get me to describe it whenever I do certain interviews and stuff. And it's really hard to describe, but it's also, I love that about it. So, cause it's kind of, you know, sometimes in certain genres, not so much anymore, but when I started, I was too quote unquote Americana to be like Nashville, but I was too Nashville to be quote unquote Americana. Like, I kind of feel like I didn't really belong anywhere, even though that's not true now, but Texas music was, I belonged there because we all belonged there when we didn't belong anywhere else, I guess.
Well, that's what originally made me want to actually write books, was I wrote Red Dirt and it came out in 2020. And that's where I'm from Stillwater. I know all the history of that scene. I was at one point, I was always the last resort for the Yellow House when they ran out of weed everywhere else. That was a phone call they would make 2:30 in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
But
that's amazing.
After watching for like 20 years, this scene that I always associated with Payne County, Oklahoma, become this term of art along with the Texas genre. And it happened in the post ragweed height of Turnpike originally era, that radio stations and marketers would use the term Texas Red Dirt music. And it was just like, always like, bothering me, because it wasn't that it was just a disservice to Red Dirt, it was a disservice to Texas music too. Like, there is a difference in the music that Randy Rogers makes versus what was being made in Stillwater. And so I wrote that book originally just thinking, like, I just want to let everyone know what Red Dirt actually is, and also explain why everybody's always trying to create these terms of art in Texas to help market it easier. But the fact that it even got to that point at all was interesting. And then once I went back, once that was finished and I read it, I was like, well, I have just unlocked a future for myself of doing this with every single Americana, independent country, new country, even frankly country genre that I can, because they're, as like you said, every one of them filters back through Texas. Mm-hmm. It's unique. And I don't know how you feel about it being in the middle of it, but I always wonder, like, is this what like Motown was like before it was called Motown? Like, or is this what grunge was like in like 1990? Was just watching everything before it has been fully fleshed out and identified. And that's how I feel about all these little pockets of Americana music.
Yeah, no, I agree. Or I often think about just, you know, in 500 years, are people going to look back and be like, wow, can you imagine being at Steamboat where like Brie Bagwell's hanging out with Willie Braun and Mickey Braun, all the Braun's are in there. And then in walks, you know, like Gary Peanut, and you're like, whoa, like what a time to be alive. Like, that's kind of how I feel, especially when we're on the road. I mean, something cool like that happened to me the other day, and I was just, you know, backstage with the Bronze and Steve Trevino and Fluffy and like Jamie Lynn. And it was just such a cool little group. And I think that I can leave places and think this is a really special, cool moment that I think is still being shaped. Like you said, it still feels like it's still being shaped as a time period.
That's sort of, and I know you know this because I've been in this exact situation at many of your shows. One of the reasons that I kind of just like to hang in the wings, it's not so much because, you know, I'm desperate to like have a drink with Bree Bagwell or whatever. I'm just trying to like, I just realized that I'm seeing something that is special, and I don't know exactly how it will all play out in the end and how it will ultimately be thought of, but I'm just seeing it from an angle that not a lot of folks get to, and I feel like I should always be taking it in. And so it's rare that you'll ever see me at a show where I don't like at least pull out my notes app, and it could be anything from, you know, you and Allie Walker at the Mercury Lounge in Tulsa to Boys from Oklahoma with 50,000 people in Stillwater or Waco. I'm always just trying to like make notes of just things that I'm seeing. Because I just think like that's our version of all the almost famouses and all the,
right,
the little like insights that people got into all these other scenes. And I just happen to be in a position that maybe not now, but maybe a year from now, maybe 2 days from now, whenever I'm at a show, I'm just always thinking like, maybe there'll be something to say here.
Right. I love that. Or I love hearing, you know, Gary Pierre, Ray Wiley talk about them, you know, hanging out with Jerry Jeff and the things that they did. It's so legendary. And so it's like, not that I, you know, I mean, I hope I am, and when I'm their age, that I'm in that same category and I can be like, this one time me and Willie Braun, you know, whatever, like those kinds of, not that I'm doing it for those reasons, but I do think that we are in such a special time. And it's so fun. Like, I really am proud of what it is, which sounds weird too. Like, the older that I get, the more that I look around and I'm really proud of the music that's coming out of our scene and our friends, and how great everyone's writing is and how great everyone's live performances is. I guess I didn't really notice it at first because I was just excited to be there. But
yeah,
everybody is just trying really hard to make great music. Yeah. And that makes me so proud. Like, I could cry talking about it. Just but they do.
Well, because everybody is music, especially if you are a songwriter, is sort of, it's got roots in this being influenced by Gary Pete, Willie, or Guy Clark.
Guy Clark comes up in every conversation that I have.
Robert Earl, yeah, you know, and so, and that's been the case from day one for anybody that would be, you know, roughly our age making this type of music. And what's going to happen one day, and it's starting to happen because just time does what it does, is people are now speaking about you guys the way that we're talking about Gary P. and Guy Clark.
Hey, this is Bree Bagwell, and if you want to listen to this podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/BreeBagwell.
Are you ready to take your merchandise to the next level? Well, just ask me who I use, and that is CH Lone Star Promo. They specialize in screen printing and direct-to-garment, embroidery, laser engraving, anything promo-related, they can do it. Step up your merch game now with CH Lone Star Promo and tell them Bree and Whiskey sent you.
And that is a product of everybody like pushing everybody to make a better song. And it makes you self-critical. It makes you a self-editor, but you also pay a lot of attention to like, well, 2 years ago, I used this word in a lyric. I would never use that word now. You're always taking these incremental steps to just like refine, but imagine an entire genre doing that. And the music that was groundbreaking in 2004, artists aren't making that music now. And I'm not talking about like at a country level, I'm talking about in Texas and the Hill Country, because they have just they have challenged themselves to keep evolving and improving as songwriters. And to bring that full circle, that's what Guy Clark was always all about. He was always all about your next song is just going to be built upon all the ones you've already written, if you do it right, it should be better.
It should be better. And that's, and that kind of, they're a little bit, we get, you know, not everybody, but we do get a little bit of the fans that were like, I miss old Brie Bagwell music.
That's true.
But, and then I miss the old, and it's like, well, we are changing. And we're all recording at the top levels of in studios, you know, we're all recording at the best studios with the best musicians. Yeah. So our music is able to compete really with anything out there as far as quality goes, which is very fun.
Yeah.
But I think people also love being something, being a part of something that was, they were there at the beginning.
You know what I do whenever I miss the old Brie Bagwell? I get, you know what, get my phone out and I look at it and I find the first album and I press play on it.
Like thank
it's very easy
thank
to
you.
Do. It's very easy to connect.
Thank you.
I mean,
and Sony owns those masters, so I won't get any of that money, but I appreciate it.
Right. I'm just doing this for me, not for you.
Yeah, right.
But it's the reason that Number Two Live Dinner and Texas Cooking, old Number Ones, became what they did, because over the course of his career, when somebody misses the old Robert Earl Keane, they play Number Two Live Dinner. That's what we're doing with everybody
right now.
You miss the old Randy Rogers, you play Roller Coaster.
Right.
You miss, for 15 years, if you missed Ragweed, you wouldn't play Soul Gravy. You just did.
Right. And can we talk about that recently? Because that's the newest book. That's one I haven't read.
That's Never Say Never.
Never Say Never.
You don't have a copy of it? You will after this
okay,
episode.
Okay, thank you. Right. Well, I put it down to talk about where to get your books, because I don't have to get them. They just show up on my doorstep and they're autographed and they have a dedication.
Yeah.
So all I have to do is complain and then you send me one. But for the rest of the people that don't get to complain to you directly, I was looking on the website, but it's through your the publisher.
Yeah, it's back. I did it self-publishing, which sounds a little bit, that phrase carries some negative connotations in books, because it basically implies that no one's going to read your book.
We all self-publish our albums.
Right. That's why I did it, actually. I spent...
I'll
get to the answer. I'll get to your actual answer in a second, but it's fascinating because this is a good point you bring up. When I went to write the first book, Red Dirt, I actually shopped for more than a year for a literary agent and a book deal. And especially because I worked at the Times, where everybody writes books, all my colleagues were like, I'm going to hook you up with my agent or my whatever. They'll take care of you. And every time they would always hook me up with their person, and their person would read my proposal and really like it. And then there would be a big and it was always either, this is a really well done proposal, the writing is great, we really like it, but could there be a little more, Garth Brooks and a little less Stoney LaRue in here? alternately, if they didn't do that, they would say, and this being 2018, it sounds so weird to say now, because it's like nobody would say this 7 years later. They would also say the same thing. The writing is great, this proposal is great, but this genre, Red Dirt, is too niche for us to ever sell. And so one day I just kind of snapped. I was like, you know what? I know how to reach these artists' fan bases, and I don't need a publishing house to reach an artist's fan base. And so that was when I just decided, the way to spread the word about the work that I was doing was simply to be very, 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 to cast a wide net in the books that I write, as far as not just the number of artists that get featured in them, but the different styles and ranges of music, because those represent different fan bases. Your own fan base doesn't match up with Caitlin Butts' fan base, but there's overlap. And so one fan base might be interested in another. But what that actually practically does for me is every time you or Caitlin, shares it on your Instagram story, the orders light up, and I'm now four books in, and every single book that I've ever put out, the first day that I put it on sale, the first day one, it has outperformed what you're supposed to do as an independent publisher for the life of a book.
Oh my gosh.
In one day, every single, all four times. And, which tells me that that plan was correct.
Right.
And it also tells me, like, now I don't want a publishing deal because I think every single book has also outperformed any advance I could ever imagine getting. And that also, though, now that the success of the books can be established and it's there, and that's why, it has all these side benefits. I can make special editions of books. Mm-hmm. I can release a book in August and then it can have its cycle, but then I can go to Steamboat in the winter and do a special version of that book that's got the Steamboat logo on it, that's got a special chapter just dedicated to Steamboat at the end, and there's new interviews with all the artists in, and it can be something that John Dixon uses as VIP gifts and artist gifts, and we'll do signings, and it keeps it fresh, it keeps it on a longer cycle. It's not really any different than artists that release deluxe versions of their records. So that is the big, long-winded why. But you can still buy all my books on Amazon.
Right.
They are still distributed worldwide, so there are bookstores that will carry them, especially in Oklahoma. It's very, very, very skewed toward independent bookstores in Oklahoma that will actually carry them in person. I also tend to show up at festivals and set up stands like at merch. But the place to go buy them is backloungepublishing.com.
Right.
And it's all four books. It's really easy. And if you order from there, I think every single book without fail that I've ever sold through there, I have signed to. So I try to make it like a little more special than something you can get on Amazon.
I love that.
Yeah.
And then there's a girl that got your book at Music Fest, one of the very cool limited edition copies, and you signed it for her.
Yes.
And then she's been coming to shows forever. Sorry, Lacey. So I took her book and I was like, let me go get it signed by all my friends for you. And then I lost it.
I remember this story.
I lost her book. And I texted the Bronze because that's where I was seen last with it. It was in the Bronze room. And so then you were nice enough to mail me another copy of it. And then I went and got it signed by everyone as best as I could. But that it's so fun because people can, I mean, our fan bases are, you know, I'm not selling out stadiums, right? But my fans are so insanely loyal. Yeah. And if they want to know more about me, they will buy a book to read more about me and support somebody who's supporting me. Like, they get a great product. I'm not saying that they would buy a bad book, but I'm saying that's what's so awesome about all of our fan bases.
And that's also something that I am very in tune with. I know that just about every book that I write, with the exception of Never Say Never, which was very, very, very much a full 200-page tale of the Ragweed reunion. But for the most part, every book that I write, if you're a fan of just one single artist in that book who's only going to get one out of 25 chapters, I have to make it worth it for that person to spend $25 or $35. So I really focus. I don't really want to have any throwaway chapters. I don't want to half-ass anything about any artist, because sometimes, actually oftentimes, that's going to be the first time the artist in question has actually been published in a book. We're not in this 80s and 90s world of coffee table books where people were just filling up page after page with the most basic stuff about artists and selling them at every airport bookstore. Most artists that I write about have not been featured in books before. Most artists' fans know that. And so if you're one of those people, if you're a fan of one of those artists, I have to make a 25 chapter book worth it to you to buy for just one chapter and hope that you read the rest. But I never kind of assume that. So
I never thought about it that way because those are all my friends. So like every chapter, right. I do think I think it would be very rare for somebody to be a fan of me, but not be a fan of also most of the people in that book, you know?
Good, fair.
So I think they buy it for 24 of 25 and then they discover one person they don't know.
Well, here's I will also give you a secondary reason that I try and I don't ever want to half-ass a chapter about an artist, because if the chapter on you was really good and a chapter on Willie Braun sucked, Willie Braun would never let me hear the end of it. He'd be like, you took the whole chapter off when you wrote about me. Yeah. The funny part about Motel Cowboy Show, it was so focused on the Braun's. It was so, everything about it, everything about the Motel Cowboy Show was filtered through the prism of Reckless Kelly. For good reason, because they were the ones that took Idaho music to Austin, and ultimately that led to them taking it to Nashville and beyond. But the book is also very much about Pinto Bennett Kip Hathaway and the history there, and all these cowboy singers that would just make their living playing seven nights a week in Idaho and Nevada, playing ski resorts and the like. But it was always, without Reckless Kelly, I don't know that I write the book, because everything, there needed to be a tie that, that binded everything, and that was Reckless. So that meant Willie Braun got to see the book before just about anybody else. And so I sent him like the very first advance copy, maybe a month before it comes out. And he spends the entire month before the final deadline just every day texting me his wholesale corrections. Just like, sometimes, I mean, the ones I was lucky with were just like typos. Sometimes I got stuff completely just entirely factually wrong. And so if you walk up to Willie at Americana Fest tonight and you say, hey, Willie, what do you mean to pull a crutch? And he'll say, to send me a book riddled with typos.
Well, listen, like you've written four books.
Yeah.
There's gonna be a couple typos. You're a human being, and like I can't even write a paragraph on my phone without a typo. So like, no worries there. I really do want to write a book though someday.
All right, I've been kind of
slowly, you know, putting things down, and I already know what I want to call it. And I have made almost no progress. So I just want to say congratulations, because it's a daunting task, and you've done it four different times,
yeah.
And they're all great. And I love, like, you're at BBR. I do want to touch on this, because we already like flew by with time, which I knew we would, because we were buddies. But can you just talk about going on the road with Wyatt Flores for?
Oh God!
Did you go for a year?
Yeah, a year.
And that is, he's a fascinating case, because he's kind of like the new wave of what can happen in music. Yes, go for it.
So what you need to know about Wyatt. And the book that you're talking about there is Red Dirt Unplugged. Came out last December. Get it at backloungepublishing.com or Amazon. Bree is in that
book. I'm in that book.
There was a definite theme in that book that tied the Great Divide. One of the original high flyers in Red Dirt. Without the Great Divide, there is no Ragweed. There's no Turnpike.
Right.
Great Divide frontman Mike McClure produced the very first Whiskey Myers album. You get details like this in this album. But they broke up in the early 2000s, got back together around 2010, and now they're having this second moment. And I was chronicling that, and they made their Ryman and Opry debuts last year, and I wanted to include that. But the reason they made those Ryman and Opry debuts was because Wyatt Flores insisted on it. And Wyatt Flores is a kid from Stillwater who is 24 years old now, and he grew up being mentored by the Great Divide. And now he's poised to be the biggest star in Red Dirt. Like, I think if he's not a bona fide country star, he's still going to be one of those Red Dirt artists that plays stadiums and arenas for forever, and probably longer than any of them are right now. And so in late 2023, I got asked to write a story for Rolling Stone about the resurgence of, not the resurgence, the rise of Red Dirt. And I included Wyatt in it, and it went really well, but I had never met him. I knew he was from the same place I was, but we hadn't met until I interviewed him over Zoom for that story. And that was a kind of a watershed story for me and Rolling Stone, because it opened the door for a lot of other stories I've written since. But once I realized there was this connection to the Great Divide, and then I needed to write another book about Red Dirt, I thought I have to provide this elder statesman perspective from the Divide. And also, who's the newest, youngest, who represents this new wave of Red Dirt artists? And I had lots to choose from. There was Caitlin, there was South Hall, there was Josh Malloy. The Red Dirt's really having a moment right now. But I went with Wyatt. And so to get to do that, I waited till November of 23 when he had a show in New York. And his managers, he has two managers, they came down, came to town a day early. And I took them out to dinner. Took them to a taco shop in the bottom of the Empire State Building. Okay. I was trying to impress them. let everyone know who I was. And they knew enough about Red Dirt to have kind of known me. But we quickly became friends. And I said, would you please tell Wyatt that I want to tell his story in painstaking detail? I saw the, and they did. 2 weeks later, I went and saw them again, this time in Dallas. And backstage, I meet Wyatt in person for the first time. He says, I'm in. Let's do this thing you're saying. And I really did spend most of 2024 with Wyatt. I was there at Kane's in February of 24 when his managers pulled him off the road because he had had a full mental breakdown and needed to seek help. I was there at his first show back. The biggest part of the interview that became his portion of Red Dirt Unplugged was done the day after they pulled him off the road. And so that's coming from a certain headspace. So I spent all last summer going back to his home in Stillwater or to his shows and refining what he had told me in the wake of that. And by the end of it, I had been to something like 40 something shows in like 20 states with him.
Wow.
Which has a really funny punchline because at the end of last year, me and Wyatt did a conversation and song thing. It'd be like this podcast, except if you also were playing music at Kane. Okay. And we sold it out. And then we also, at the end of it, we signed copies of the book and Wyatt signed copies of Welcome to the Plains.
I saw that. Yeah.
And somebody came up and I had mentioned during this thing, however many, like 40 something shows. And somebody walked up to me, just a regular fan, and went, I saw Wyatt 55 times. And I was like, all right, touche. But again, like there's something you get if you're able to dedicate that much time to an artist that you don't get if you're making Zoom calls, if you're just reviewing shows. And it's probably my favorite single thing that I've ever done because a lot of the music that I write about and a lot of the artists that I write about, I had this built-in relationship with. But with Wyatt, it was very much, we're going to learn about each other together.
Right.
And now it's been like a year since I've written about him and it's so weird. Don't worry, I'm going to again. When he puts out his next album, I'm going to write the definitive story. He'll be in Rolling Stone. We've been texting each other this month, like, just, hey, miss you, buddy. Because I've been to like five of his shows this year.
Yeah.
And that by itself just feels weird.
Well, we're complicated people. And so I'm glad that you can't really learn unless you really dive in like that. So, and I was an idiot at 24. So good for him. I'm so proud of him. And I'm proud
of you. Oh, he's an idiot. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, we all are. We all are crazy. But I'm so glad that you were here with me today. You guys go grab all of Josh's books. They come autographed, which is amazing. And look for him at the festivals and stuff. And I was honored you wanted to be on my podcast. That made me so happy. So, like, that made my day when you were like, I want to be on your podcast. So, you've been on our list for a long time. So, we had to come to Nashville to make it happen.
I have been after Brie for more than a year to come on this podcast. And this is the only podcast that I've been thirsty about.
Yay! But
usually, the ones that I'm on usually happen as a result of a coordinated media push. This was very much me walking around behind Brie after parties and just going, hey, I want to be on OnlyFans. All right, we'll get you on OnlyFans. Go buy me a beer.
It's our pleasure. Thank you for being here, my friend.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thanks, Kat.